Friends, if you've been following Beyond Trauma, you know we believe in evidence-based recommendations. Well, the evidence shows that better sleep promotes better health outcomes in every other area of life. So how do we fix our sleep? One of the best ways we can fix our sleep is sleeping cooler, and I found a product that can really help us do that. Cozy Earth bamboo sheets are made from Vicos from bamboo. They wick away heat, helping you to sleep cooler. This promotes the release of melatonin and leads to faster falling asleep and improved sleep quality. Like our guest expert will tell you, your bedroom should be like a cave, and these sheets do it. Plus, friends, they feel luxury. Since getting my Cozy Earth sheets, I want to get into bed sooner, cuddle up, unwind, read, and enjoy my space. I feel like I'm treating myself by being in bed, and winding down before bedtime is what we need to sleep well. Cozy Earth offers a 100-night sleep trial. Try these sheets during these hot days of summer. If you're not in love, return them hassle-free. But trust me, you won't want to. And they come with a 10-year warranty. That's a decade of cool, quality sleep. Upgrade your summer. Go to CozyEarth.com now and use code LARALAND for 40% off best-selling temperature-regulating sheets, apparel, and more. Trust me, you will feel the difference the very first night. And if you're sharing a bed with someone, they're going to feel more comfortable too. Sleep cooler, lounge lighter, stay cozy. I'm Lara Land, somatic coach and yoga teacher trainer, and this is the Beyond Trauma podcast. What a couple of years we have had. The challenges continue to grow, and more of us are experiencing some level of traumatic stress. My commitment here is to bring you the most up-to-date insights on exactly how trauma affects our mind-body-spirit system, and how we can work with our bodies to soften its impacts. You will be hearing from trauma survivors and researchers, and together, we are going to incorporate what they have to teach us to heal ourselves and promote the well-being of all those around us. Here we go. Beyond Trauma listeners, did you know you can always start over? Giving myself permission to begin again at any moment has allowed me to constantly evolve, and it's a tool I use with all of my coaching clients. It's also the premise of my first book, My Bliss Book. My Bliss Book is an undated life purpose planner that comes with an automated coaching program sent directly to your inbox biweekly when you enroll using the secret URL found inside the book. You will receive my creative visualization meditation, encouraging you to move beyond social programming and self-imposed limitations and into visualizing your truest, most honest vision for your own unique life. Then using my Bliss Book, you will work backwards to develop actionable steps to meet goals throughout the year that take you towards your big vision. Have a habit of buying pretty planners and putting them down before they're finished? Not a problem. My bi-weekly emails provide just the nudge needed to pick up your planner again. And if you miss a few days, you don't waste your book. The book is undated, so you can always start again. My Bliss Book is available off my site, laraland.us, and is now 20% off for my podcast listeners with code STARTAGAIN. But hurry, this discount won't run forever. Welcome back, everyone, to this exciting series on sleep and intimacy, all the things that happen in the bedroom. And today we explore dreams. And of course, all in the context of stress and trauma recovery and growth. Wow. Wow, wow. I have a great guest for you. I am invigorated to share this with you. She's really created her own model, but so super informed by pulling in the best of so many therapeutic models to work with dreams. We do a sample of dream work on a dream I recently had. I kind of spontaneously was like, do you want to do this in one of my dreams? And then I was like, what did I just get into? I'm so scared sharing my inner life with the world. But hopefully, while I have some like strong understandings of myself and reflections through the very short process that we do together. So you will see how cool this is. And she offers workshops where you can start to ask yourself questions
that can help you interpret your dreams. She's got a lot of great tips and interventions for if you can't remember your dreams, and really, really beautiful practitioner, Dr. Leslie Ellis. She's a leading expert in the use of experiential and somatic approaches in psychotherapy, in particular with working with dreams and nightmares and the effects of trauma. So couldn't have had a better guest to talk about this. She's the author of A Clinician's Guide to Dream Therapy and offers online training in embodied experiential dream work and nightmare treatment. Dr. Leslie Ellis has a PhD in clinical psychology with a somatic specialization and a master's in counseling psychology with a focus on depth Jungian approaches. She was a psychotherapist in private practice in Vancouver, BC for more than 25 years. She's a former adjunct faculty at Adler University and past president of the International Focusing Institute, where she's currently a certifying coordinator. Dr. Ellis has published numerous book chapters and journal articles on the use of focusing and dream work and psychotherapy. And we talk a little bit about focusing in this episode. I wish I had had time to talk to her more. I did a course on focusing with the Embody Lab. Most recently, she's had articles on nightmares and the nervous system and the alarming nightmare-suicide link, which we also discuss. An update of her clinical dream book was just published, and she's currently working on a book about hybrid dream wake states and disturbed dreaming, a true expert in her field, in this very important and often overlooked field. I feel like we are so lucky to have landed this guest. This is a gift. Here we go. Dr. Leslie Ellis, thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. I'm excited to talk about dreams.
I am so excited. I was thinking we just hit the 3-year anniversary of the podcast, and I'm like, what do I want to explore? And we're actually doing a series on things in the bedroom, sleep and dreams and intimacy. And wow, and I'm about to graduate with a degree in mental health counseling. And I learned a lot personally from reading your book about the importance of including conversations about dreams in therapy. So I'm very interested.
Great. Yeah. Congrats on your almost finishing your degree. That's an accomplishment.
Yes. Yeah. So maybe we can start off with some basics about what dreams have to tell us and, you know, why we'd want to, like, why is it important to remember dreams and explore our dreams?
Wow.
that's basically the question that will probably could take us the whole hour. I know.
Yeah. Well, I can talk about a few things. I mean, if you're in counseling, for example, like you're just entering the field, I find that as a tool for getting underneath the surface of things and deepening conversations and unearthing what really matters to people, dreams are a doorway into that, because when we're dreaming, they're unfiltered. And so they may appear kind of strange and sometimes a little nonsensical. So people can tend to dismiss them. They're actually pictures of what our deepest feelings are or what's stirred up in us. And when we're dreaming, the dreams don't appear to make sense because we dream in metaphor and we dream in image. It's like the part of our brain that would sit down and give us a lecture about what's going on is that part is really not functioning. So our dreams have a particular language that they use, but within that language, they communicate very well what's important in our emotional landscape. And especially those things that we're avoiding or maybe don't want to think about, they tend to surface at night. And so it makes perfect sense that if you turn toward your dreams, you're going to then, it's going to become clear the things that you need to pay attention to or that matter. And so that's a quick start to that question.
Yeah. It struck me that the way you're writing about it and the way you're talking about it now, it has this kind of similarity to what happens maybe when we meditate, like that filter, that cognitive filter, like kind of comes down and some other stuff can bubble up.
Yes, absolutely. It's like the editor, the internal editor, or our like superego or conscience, all of our logical functioning, all those things are really dumped way down when we're dreaming, and they kind of they quieten when we meditate as well. And so it allows things to bubble up that are probably more important to pay attention to, but that in our day-to-day, running around doing our lives and getting busy, we don't tend to have the time or the inclination to sit with these things. So our dreams will alert us to those things. And sometimes really dramatically so, we can have really big dreams or nightmares that are saying, no, you really have to pay attention to this now. And so I find them invaluable, actually, as a therapist. And I've been paying attention to my dreams and writing them down for decades now. And they've been really instrumental in, learning about myself and about things I need to work with. And so I've always been a convert, so I can't imagine not paying attention to my dreams. But, for people who are wondering why they should, I have a whole bunch of reasons. I feel like it's important.
Yeah. And for people who are wanting to pay more attention to their dreams, but, are those people that feel like they don't dream or they don't remember their dreams, do you have any tips for them to start to have more dreams or remember their dreams more?
Yes. I get asked this a lot because a lot of people will go, oh, you're right about dreams. And then I don't dream, they'll tell me. But really, we all dream about 90 minutes to 2 hours every night. And there are some tricks to remembering them. First of all, we tend to start our sleep with go into deep sleep, and then we start to have cycles in and out of REM or dreaming sleep. And it's most concentrated toward morning. So when you first wake up, chances are you'll have just been dreaming. And that's a good time to really stop. If you can, slow down your waking process, that transition to waking, and really take your time there and lie really still and just sort of ask, was I just dreaming? What was just happening? Where was I just now? And chances are there'll be remnants of a dream. And it's easy to dismiss them if they're little snippets, but whatever you can grasp onto, I would say just imagine just replaying it in your mind, like before you get up. Because as soon as you get up and you change your posture, a lot of times whatever's there will just fade away. So really lie there and capture what's there and go over it in your mind a few times so it's implanted in your waking memory, and then write it down right away. And whatever you get, even if it's just a little wisp of a dream, write that down. And then the more you pay attention to your dreams, the more you'll remember them, the more they'll come. And then, once you have a piece of a dream, it may not make sense to you immediately. But I like to quote Ernest Hartman, who was a famous dream researcher, who said that dreams are picture metaphors of our most salient emotions. So if you see your dream as an image of a feeling, it might make sense to you to start thinking of it that way. And so if you dream of a great big dragon that might be breathing fire, you could think, well, maybe I'm really mad about something. Rather than being frightened by the dragon, think, if this is an image of my feelings, wow, okay, I think I know what that's about. It'll start to give you some ideas about what it might mean.
I love that as a real, clear action step. Like, this is an image of my feeling. What is the feeling?
Yeah, and then what is it about? And chances are, if you think of it that way, it'll start to make sense. Yeah.
And, different symbols, there's some that seem to be kind of universal or cultural, and then there's also like the personal aspect of how we see that symbol. That's just what's coming to me, that a dragon could mean one thing to someone and one thing to another. Like, how do you process that both as a dreamer and as a clinician?
Yeah, I get asked this a lot too about universal symbols, like archetypes, Jungian archetypes. And I have actually got a strong feeling about not doing that, of not ascribing a universal meaning to a dream image. Because I feel like dream symbols can be universal, but the first level of understanding them is what they mean to us personally. And for example, I was in a dream class. When I first studied dreams, it was at Pacifica. In my master's program, actually, I was very lucky to have dream studies as an integral part of it. And one of my classmates was describing this dream of being like way at the top of a mountain in this really frigid landscape, and he was trekking along on this frozen lake. And my image of it was cold and desolate and lonely. And so, you know, but then when he was asked about this, his feeling sense of this dream setting, he said, that to me is heaven on earth. That is, there is nowhere I would rather be than at the top of a mountain in this, you know, in the cold snow. And so you have to really consider what the symbol means to the person, what it evokes, because I think our dreams are actually tailor-made to evoke something specifically in us. And it might be about something universal. Like, I do think it is possible to be dreaming for the world and dreaming about, you know, the state of the world or the environment and things like that will come into our dreams that are asking something larger from us, but they're going to be speaking to us directly. And so the symbols, a dog is another example I like to use. Like, I love dogs. So a dog in my dream might mean loyalty and love, but for someone who's terrified of dogs, it has a whole different meaning. So I usually say, don't look at a dream dictionary, really just go into your own sense of the symbols and you'll have a much better take on what it is for you.
That's really cool. Would you suggest people creating their own symbol dictionary?
Yes. Yes. I think that would be an excellent way to actually start mapping out your dreams and creating a log and even, you know, drawing the images if they have, if they're really specific images, it's great to actually sketch them. Even if you're not an artist, it's really a shorthand way to get the essence of a dream down. And yeah, you could have a whole symbol dictionary that's unique to you and a shorthand version, and your dreams will start to use that to speak to you.
Wow.
I actually know some people who do this.
That's great that it's like a two-way thing. And then your dreams start speaking to you in that language. And then I'm guessing also that you may start to see certain themes that are coming across time longitudinally.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we tend to dream about the same kinds of themes throughout our life, or whenever something is up for us in our life, the dream will continue that's sort of referring to that until it feels resolved. And so it's actually a good way to tell, in fact, if something in your life is up or something in your life is now resolved, is you'll stop dreaming about it. I do attract nightmares that way, and a nightmare often recurs, and it's usually presenting something pretty important to pay attention to. But when, if it's about a trauma, when that's been resolved or metabolized, the dream will shift and start to fade. And it's really a pretty good indication that it's no longer alive for you or no longer something you need to attend to the same degree.
That's beautiful. And I guess since we went there, we should spend some time on nightmares and, of course, on traumas. We focus a lot on trauma recovery. And I know there are a couple of different directions we could go about the importance of nightmares and the correlation between nightmares and suicidal ideation. Do you want to speak to that first?
Sure. Yeah, this is one thing that I really feel strongly about educating people about, because I don't think it's commonly understood or known that we all know there's a link between trauma and nightmares. That's pretty well understood. It's a cardinal symptom of post-traumatic stress injury. And when people have a really shocking trauma that they haven't recovered from, they tend to dream about it repeatedly. But what people don't know is that particular kind of dream that is related to a trauma and recurs increases someone's risk of suicide dramatically. And there's been study after study that's corroborated this. But one of the strongest pieces of evidence was this study done, it was like about 7 or 8 years ago now, I think. I'd have to check. But they took about 175 people that were hospitalized for suicide attempts, and they tracked their dreams. And those who, about two-thirds of them, had recurrent frequent nightmares. And those people were 4 times more likely to reattempt than if they didn't have nightmares like that. So, and lots of studies have corroborated this, maybe not quite as dramatically, and they've also extended it to adolescents. And so if you have or know someone who's having nightmares, and especially if they start to ramp up, that could be a sign that they're, you know, in danger of hurting themselves. And so that those dreams are really important to pay attention to, because yeah, they flag suicide risk.
Yeah, those are really strong statistics that you just shared there. And I wonder if you would also talk to us about the processing, like the trauma processing that you can do with those dreams. I was really struck by the somatic approach that you bring into your practice. It reminded me like a lot of Peter Levine, like completing that loop of the resolution that the survivor didn't get. And I know you share a personal story in your book, but any insights that you could bring into dream work and resolving the kind of circuit of trauma?
Yeah. And you know, the good news is there's a lot of evidence that this idea of dreaming the dream onward, if you have a nightmare, is really effective at changing the dream and helping metabolize that trauma. So yeah, and it is, I did compare it to Peter Levine's work about the continuation of a trauma when you've had a traumatic event and your body somehow is prevented from letting it complete. And your nervous system gets kind of locked in your nervous system. And that's what fuels the flashbacks and things. It's like your body's trying to complete this and complete the actions it would normally take, and for some reason is blocked. And so with dreams, it's like dreams are, I think, very much an attempt at, for our bodies to do that. But what happens with a really intense nightmare is that we wake up in the middle of the scariest part. And so the dream gets stopped, and then the person is afraid to go back to sleep. And it creates this whole vicious cycle of anxiety about what you're dreaming about and not enough sleep. And so it becomes difficult to really manage on its own. It sort of creates its own momentum. So what I do is a combination of imagery rehearsal therapy, which is the method that has been studied the most in terms of nightmare treatment and has very good evidence that it's effective for trauma-related nightmares. And it's simply, it's more of a cognitive approach where you write down the dream and then you write down a new ending and then rehearse that ending before sleep and during the day. And so very simple. And what I've done with it is I mainly work in an embodied experiential way with dreams. And I have a practice of allowing the dream to continue that comes from Jung, where you more enter the dream experientially and then allow it to continue in what feels like authentic to the dream. When you're in it, it has a different quality than if you're outside of it. So I feel like I favor my approach, obviously, but what I do is a few things around the process too, to make it more likely that it will be tolerable for the person. So I start with some grounding practices and calming practices. And then I invite them to look around the dream and find anything helpful in the dream, anything supportive, so that they can embody. It's like in trauma work, embodying resources or things that make you feel stronger and better before you turn toward things that are challenging. And so I just apply that same idea to dream work. And what I find is quite interesting in that once people kind of look around the dream and find supportive elements and feel them in their bodies, the ending of the dream tends to change by itself, or it continues on to a resolution. And usually if it's a trauma dream, it's a replay of the trauma. And so it often ends like right when they're in the scariest place, or they feel like they're about to die in some cases. And some part of their body, I think, just gets frozen in that time and doesn't realize things go forward from there. And clearly you survived it. So this process of kind of being in it, but feeling bolstered and supported, lets the dream naturally continue. And I've never had it not actually continue to something more resolved, some kind of a place that feels like a resolution. And it's not necessarily easy to walk through those feelings, but it's better than avoiding them, which is what people with post-traumatic stress tend to do, because then you bottle them up and they just keep coming back, sometimes with the vengeance, and it feels sort of hopeless. So even though it is a difficult memory to spend time with, this way of working with it, I think, makes it easier, more possible for it to be a constructive process. And then what's interesting is that when you look at the dreams that follow after you've done this process of entering the dream and picking up all the support you can find and then letting the dream carry forward, is that the dream is never the same after that. I've never encountered anyone who's had that same dream exactly. They'll have some of the things that we do in the session kind of infiltrate their dreams. And with more and more iterations, the dream becomes less like the original sort of stopped process and becomes more of a continuation. And then, you know, a lot of times people say they stop having the dream completely. And I don't know if that's true. I think they might still be having the dream, but if you dream a dream all the way through and it doesn't wake you up in the middle, the chances of you remembering it are pretty slim. So they may still be processing it in their sleep, in their dreams, but not remember it. So basically their experience of it is stopped happening. And it may not be. It may be still doing its work, but it's doing its work effectively versus those post-traumatic stress dreams. They're not doing what they're intended, I don't think. So this helps them. This helps them do their job.
That sounds so helpful and doable. Like, it's almost reminding me of like lucid dreaming, but you don't have to master lucid dreaming to do it, because that always sounded just too hard to me.
Yes. Well, actually, lucid dreaming, and there's been some research into that. So doing this same process while you're awake and aware within your dream is helpful for treating nightmares. You're right, if you can do it. And it's not easy. Some people can kind of spontaneously become lucid or really work at it, but it's not as simple as doing this while you're awake. Although I do find, interestingly, because I work with not just nightmares, but also every kind of dream in this way of re-entering and wandering around your dream and engaging with the characters, embodying characters, that you start to get familiar with your dream world. And there's a way that it does increase your meta awareness. I mean, not necessarily the full blown, oh, I now can do whatever I want. I think there's a misunderstanding about lucidity being like a on or off, like suddenly you're awake and, you know, you're dreaming and you can meet all the famous people you want to meet and go fly. And that's the far end of lucid awareness and control. But most of the time it's gradations of that, where you might be aware you're dreaming, but not necessarily be able to control the dream. I tend not to want to control it even when I do wake up in my dreams. I tend to just want to observe it. But you can have awareness and not control. You can have some control, but still, you know, not be fully aware you're dreaming. Sometimes you'll have a dream where you'll go, oh, I really don't want this to happen. And then your dream takes a detour. And so you have sort of gradations of lucidity. And
yeah,
you know, it is worth pursuing for people who find it interesting and, you know, want to pursue lucidity anyway. But you're right, it's a challenging state. It's a very unique hybrid state. And, you know, I'm actually in working with a group of dream researchers who are putting an app together. It's called Dormio. I think, you know, they're just about to come up with another version where it plays a pre-sleep meditation and a waking meditation to help you become lucid or to help you remember your dreams. And those kinds of things can really help. The researchers have found that obviously you can't recreate a sleep lab, but if you play suggestive lights or noises while someone's sleeping, just enough to that they're aware of it, but it's not going to wake them up, that can sometimes trigger lucidity. So, you know, if people are serious about it, there are lots of ways, but I find my way of working with waking dream, yes, much more reliable. Yeah. And simple.
Yeah. It sounds like, okay, I can do that. I know I can do that and get some relief in a kind of helpful time span. I like what you said about you have the person step in sometimes to the different characters, I'm guessing even maybe non-humans in the dream because I guess they say, I've heard it said somewhere that like we, all the pieces in the dream are us.
Yeah, that's an idea from Gestalt, the idea that everything in the dream represents a piece of ourself and maybe a disowned piece of ourself that we need to take ownership of, that Gestalt language. And I actually don't really ascribe to that, but I do find it useful to enter into the subjective experience of dream elements, because from the inside, especially mysterious ones, like, I don't know what that's doing in my dream. Why is this person or this object, this thing here? It just doesn't make sense to me. And what I find is if people are able to embody the element and see it from inside the dream element, there's a whole host of feelings and associations. And suddenly sometimes that element and even the whole dream can make sense. And it can be a projection of some aspect of ourselves that we have disowned. But I don't believe every dream and every element is that. I think that dreams are actually larger than we are, not the other way around. Like, the, you know, the whole, we're contained in the whole world of dream and not the dream kind of contained in us. I think that makes it too small. But the act of embodying dream characters and elements can have the impact of enlarging our consciousness or expanding what we feel is possible. You know, we can get, as we kind of go through our lives, I think we get sort of embedded in this, I wouldn't say narrow. I mean, it varies person to person, but a certain way of being in the world and seeing the world. And I think dreams just really widen that lens, especially if you enter into characters that feel very mysterious and other. There's like other ways of being and looking at the world. And it really helps. Dreams, I think, give you that wider perspective, and sometimes shockingly so.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking of like so much there, collective consciousness and as you said, like different perspectives that can be brought in. If we think of it the other way, as like opening up to everything dreams can be. I'm wondering if you ever do like a family constellation kind of like, do you ever do group work with dreams, and can people have other people play the characters in their dreams, or am I just going too far?
I do group work with dreams. I haven't done that, although I know there are people who do that kind of dreams as psychodrama and dream playing or create. There's a lot of creative opportunities with dreams, and that would be one of them. And I don't do that specifically, but one thing I do, I've just started doing, is this process I've called dream weaving, where I invite everybody in the room, rather than in sort of classic dream group process, you have one person present their dream in various ways. The group responds to that and helps really flesh out its meaning, and it can be very powerful. But I always feel like that way of working with dream, if you're in a big group, only one person gets to have their dream worked with, and it can take a long time to get around to everyone. So I invite people to bring a small dream or a dream snippet or even a waking dream, and present the image to the group and have the entire group do this, to present an image. And then we work with the images collectively. And it starts to weave into a process where they all seem to mix together and make sense. And people pick up, you know, one character and bring it into their own dream. And the process is, it's quite magical. I've just started doing this in the last few years and kind of honing the process, because it can be a bit unwieldy, and trying to figure out a way to make it contained within the time frame of a group and feel manageable. But it's like we just sort of weave a collective dream image and then respond to what comes up for people. And it's always quite amazing how the dream images seem to have a relationship with each other by the end.
Yeah. Group work has all these other elements, managing the group and the dynamics of the group and the timing and people yes. that move forward and move back. And mm-hmm. you know, just remember, I went to acting school and we had to like perform a dream and like create basically what I was describing, but we hadn't had any of the, and what groups take with really creating that safe space and structure to do so. And how are we going to close this container? And just looking back and thinking, yeah, I could have used a little more about that.
Yeah, well, that's how you learn. Yeah. Yeah, and actually there is a dream conference later this month where they do, I don't know if you're aware of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, but they have, if you're interested in dreams, you should really look them up, but they have a conference online. It's usually in person, but one of the things they do, which is so much fun, is that at the end they have a ball and everybody is invited to come as their favorite dream character, and people dress up and enact these characters. And it is just, it can be funny or poignant or amazing. It's just a parade of these wild dream costumes. So it's kind of like what you're talking about. It's so much fun.
And how people interpret someone else's dream symbol also teaches them something about themselves, I'm guessing.
Yeah, in fact, there's a few dream group protocols. One is the Ullman group process. It's developed by Montague Ullman. And he talks about how when you offer something to someone else about their dream, you need to own the projection, really just not assume that what you're feeling about the dream has anything to do with the dreamer. So you start with something like, in my imagined version of this dream, and then you can offer what comes for you. And so you're really separating your projections, because they may or may not resonate. And then the dreamer can pick it up or not. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Now that we're talking about sleep, I want to tell you about my new nighttime routine. Some of you know I have a killer morning routine, but I have to admit that when the willpower goes toward the end of the day, my nighttime routine has not been on point. But I've changed that, and I'm going to tell you how. I've started to take Moon Brew. Moon Brew is a magnesium-based hot cocoa. I have it every night, and it's completely changed the way I sleep. First of all, my magnesium was low on my last blood work, and I didn't realize also how disconnected I've been from real nourishing rest until Moon Brew became part of my nightly routine. If you don't know about it, it's a magnesium-based sleep aid designed to help your body and your mind wind down naturally. Not like pills, no grogginess in the morning, just cozy flavors, calming natural ingredients like chamomile, L-theanine, and other superfoods, things your body knows how to use to ease yourself into sleep. If you haven't tried Moon Brew yet, you can get 30% off your first order with code LARA30 at moonbrew.co. Try it now, and you'll also get 60-day money-back guarantee. It's the most delicious way to get better sleep. Go to moonbrew.co, that's MOONBREW.CO, and use code LARA30 for your 30% off.
You know, I had a dream recently, and there's a strong image in it. Would it be appropriate to share it?
Yeah, of course. Do you want to like explore it a little bit? And
yeah, would that be okay?
Be fine. Yeah, it'd be fun.
And as I was reading your book and preparing for our conversation, I was kind of trying to have more dreams or remember more dreams. And I kind of was, but there was this one that happened. I think it was like right before we connected, and it's just so strong. So I just go with that because it happened on its own. So I had this dream and I was in an indoor water park. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of where I took my daughter. I think it was her third birthday. And I was at the top of a slide, a water slide, but I was wearing kind of like a backpack. Like I was kind of like dressed, not in water clothes. So I was a little like, should I go down this? But I decided to go down it. Or I think there were people that were just like, go down it. And I went down it. And then I was at a different level of the park. And there seemed to be like a lot of people there. And I'm just thinking now, it seemed kind of like a very much like an indoor center there. Like there were groups visiting, maybe classes or tour groups. And there was this group there. And I think I was talking and engaging with some of the people. And on the side, there was a woman with no head. And she had a long neck and no head. And she was very much alive. And I was made to understand that this was just like any other amputation, someone born with, or, you know, who had to lose a hand or an arm, and like she could do everything. And I think there's a feeling of like, didn't I know that you could have a head, you could be born without a head as well and live a fulfilling life. And that's what I remember of this dream. It has definitely stuck with me.
Yeah, that's a pretty striking image, I would say. So the first thing I always like to ask about a dream image, like any dream image, is what have you made of it? Or what are your thoughts, initial thoughts about this image?
The long neck is a little like a Beetlejuice vibe. Like that's what comes to me. The whole thing was like absurd and so normal. So that, I guess that's a feeling that's standing out for me. This is very normal, but also being very absurd at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Within the dream, like really obviously anything can happen. And there is a way of, it's like suspending disbelief or, you know, in the dream that is normal to have surreal things happen. So you're not alarmed in the dream. It's more that afterwards you go, wow, that was wild. So what I like to do first is explore the setting. So this is a indoor water park that sounds like it's all like a theme park, like a larger venue, but has a water slide. And I just wonder what your feeling is about those places.
Yeah, it reminds me of like places that I'm going with my daughter a lot, like learning, trying things, exploring a lot. Like there's a feeling of the crowds, like a little bit of there being like a lot of people.
Yeah. So it's a mix of busy and kind of exploration fun. You associate it with your daughter, which makes sense because that's probably why you're in those places and
yeah.
wouldn't necessarily be otherwise.
I seemed a little like unprepared. Like I didn't know that it was going to be water, you know, like, that stuck to me. Like I'm at the top of this water slide and I wasn't in the right clothes, right? I wasn't prepared. I had kind of like a backpack on and I think I was in like clothes, not a bathing suit.
Yeah. And so, you know what, that's an interesting thing to pick up in a dream is this anomaly between what sort of a difference between what should be normal and what you're doing in the dream. And so you're not dressed properly. You're not in, sometimes clothes can be about your persona or the attitude, the visible attitude you bring, and you are somehow not completely dressed or for this. So I wonder what you make of that. Like, do you, you know, some ideas I would speculate internally if I was working with a dream, I wouldn't necessarily say out loud. I usually let the dreamer kind of arrive at it, but it could be maybe that, you know, you're not fully immersed in that childlike, like you're more dressed for, I'm not sure what's in the backpack, but yeah. I don't know if that feels true to you, if you're like more of an observer in these places, or do you get right into them? Or
yeah, good question. I guess it's very dependent. I'm wearing that backpack like I'm prepared for something. But I may be prepared for the wrong thing. And, but then I like, there's a feeling of going for it. Like I'll go down it anyway.
Yeah. You're just going to go anyway. Yeah. And so you go down and that can be symbolic too, you know, going from somewhere up high to further down. And we can't get into all of the details because I think that we'll go way over time. But what you do is you go to a different level, like a deeper level or a lower level, or that can be meaningful, you know, to slide down into something. And when you get there, you observe can you sort of feel into the dream and see it again, what you observe?
That's when I'm suddenly with this crowd of people. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to them and I see the woman to the side with no head.
Yeah, she's obviously the central image in this dream.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and it's in this world, it's normal to have no head, which is interesting. And, you know, we could speculate about what it might mean to have no head. There's lots of ideas probably that have occurred to both of us. But I wonder if you want to engage with her, you can have either a conversation with her or you could try embodying her. This is something I often suggest with dream characters that are mysterious, is just to see what the world is like from inside her perspective. So you could choose whichever feels most available or, you know, that would be the best word to use, available to you.
I feel like inside her, content, seeing the world without a head. I'm very much going about my business. Mm-hmm. And not really minding being alone, but open for like someone to engage with me as well.
Yeah. And so open and not minding this perspective. And how do you sense the world around you? What senses are available? Can you see? Can you?
It's very much almost like, it's almost like I can sense everything. And it's almost like I can see with my body.
Wow. You can see with your body. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And, you know, just stay with it for a bit longer and notice, how is it different what you see, or, you know, what do you pick up on about this environment from this interesting body?
I can feel the people like their needs and wants and vulnerabilities. It's almost like I can sense into everything that's going on with that crowd.
Ah, so your empathy muscle is much stronger. You can feel into the people more.
Yeah. And also outside of it, like not having, there's an outsider perspective of not being so drawn into it.
Oh, so more of an observer place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like understanding and feeling all their emotional world and also being a part of it from it.
Ah. Oh. It strikes me just knowing that you're just at the end of your training as a counselor, that that's actually a very helpful way to be in that work. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So coming back out, and now I just wonder, you know, when you look around the dream, just before we completely leave it behind, what's your sense of it now that you've just, we did a, like, you know, a little foray. I would normally spend a good hour with a dream like this, but just to give you a little, you know, dip a toe in, and I'm wondering now, just in that little exploration we did, how it is for you, what you make of it now.
Well, yeah, there's some much more, I mean, that last inquiry, like going into her, was very powerful. And that did speak very true to me of where I am in my life. So that, and then there's, I'm getting that sliding down into that. Those two things are coming more together now as like a fuller understanding. So it's like I'm sliding down into the depths of all that emotional knowledge and kind of going for it, even if not fully prepared. I mean, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that does kind of fit, doesn't it? Because you're just about to embark on this, you know, and I don't think anybody feels fully prepared at the beginning. I remember being quite anxious at the beginning of, you know, yeah, just not, you know, not knowing exactly, like any new thing, but this is a new thing where you're having to have this empathy. And so, you know, you can feel how the pieces of the dream, when you start to get a sense of what it might be about, the pieces of the dream that felt disconnected, all of a sudden they kind of fit and it makes sense.
Yeah, that is very cool. That is very, very cool. Thank you for that. And we didn't discuss it beforehand, and I like,
oh,
just
totally
went for
fine.
It.
It's totally fine. It's actually great.
But I think that gives the listeners like a little more of a, and you know, for them to see what the experience could be like. And I definitely have a deeper respect for the work immediately just from having that session, that mini session with you. And I know, like you said, if we had an hour, we could go even deeper, but it really helped me to realize something about where I'm at, and it's so accurate.
Yeah. Dreams are, you know, they seem at first kind of scattered and weird, like your dream definitely. How does this, what could this possibly mean? And yet when you feel into it and get a sense of what it means, it's precise. Like you feel like, oh, these images are, they're not random. They're precise. They're trying to give me a sense that's so specific to what the situation is that they're, you know, is that it's about. And I love that about them. I think when I think about what a dream is, you know, it creates a detailed virtual world that feels so real to us, and the experience feels so real. Like how, I mean, I couldn't imagine doing that consciously, like imagine creating this whole theme park and these people, and yet our dreams do this so effortlessly. I just am always wowed by that. Even after all these years of working with them, I just am quite struck by how incredibly creative they are and specific and detailed.
Yeah. And you make a great case of that in the book. That's reminding us something you say about, you know, there was once people, or there still are, that don't think there's a reason that we dream. Like, how could this thing that has been evolved with us and stayed with us, like, not have such a reason and has such detail? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they just feel meaningful. I mean, not always, but some dreams in particular, they hit you with viscerally, they're so dramatic and they're so striking. And even if you don't know exactly what they mean at first, that you do feel like, oh, this is important or this has meaning. And I think since time immemorial, people have been interested in their dreams, and have more traditional cultures really see dreams as something that we need to pay attention to collectively. And it's, I only think in sort of modern times, or this is one idea, like dreams used to be like the virtual reality and the entertainment of people before all of this technology. And now we have so much bombarding us and competing for our attention that feels magical and has this incredible impact, that it makes the dream seem less amazing. But they are, you know, I think they have been historically really a grand source of illumination and entertainment and transformation. And now they have a lot of competition, but I think there's still mm-hmm. more, there's something that dreams have that other forms of media or, you know, I wouldn't call it media, but other visions have. And it's that they're really tailor-made to us. They're like our own personal movie director creating these images. It's not random. It's not generic. It's specific to us. So that's, you know, just as we're going through, I'm just remembering your initial question, why pay attention to dreams? And whenever I think of another thing, I'm just going to drop it in here.
Oh my gosh, please. I want to make the case. Yeah. We're here to make the case for paying attention to dreams. I wonder if, you know, sometimes you wake up and you just have a feeling like a bad, like you had a bad, something bad happened in your dream, or I don't know if that's too vague, but can you?
Well, yeah, those are called white dreams. They have a name. They're not necessarily bad, but contentless, like where you know you've dreamt, but there isn't an image that's associated with it. And that's, you know, that is a, yeah, not an infrequent experience where you just have, it's left you with a bodily sense. And so I actually do a practice called focusing, which is, I talk about in my book. And so it's a good way to work with any kind of bodily sense, whether it comes from a dream or from an intuition, or just you have an interaction that comes with a feeling. And so you can inquire into the feeling sense. And sometimes it will bring the images back and really give you an understanding of what that feeling is attached to. Because I think what I notice about dreams is I think we have a lot of emotional reactions to various things during the day. And there's more that typically comes at us than we can really process. And I think what happens in dreaming is that, you know, for every 2 hours that we're awake, we need an hour of sleep and dreaming to kind of make sense of, categorize, process. And so there's things we pick up on during the day that we may not have time to really feel into or not be aware that it's impacted us. And I think those are what come through in our dreams. We're processing, separating the wheat from the chaff a little bit, what's important to pay attention to or to remember. And so when you wake up with a feeling, it's probably related to something that you encountered that got a rise out of you that, you know. And I would also say that if it's really hard to capture or make sense of, it's all right, because your dreams will repeat themselves. If you don't get it, they'll come back in another form. And sometimes I've seen this interesting pattern of like threes, where there'll be three sort of chapters in a dream. And if you unpack them, they all say the same thing, but just in a different way. They're just trying different ways to kind of process this this event or this feeling, and wanting to, I think they're really trying to help you process and understand your emotional life. They're not trying to be difficult and obscure. They just have this language limitation in that they can't just spell it out. You notice that there's very rarely any written texts or even language, or, you know, because that logical part of our brain, sort of more associated with our left hemisphere, all that is really damped down. And so we're in this more creative, imagistic, emotional space. So that's the material that the dream has to work with. But within that, it's really trying to convey something important.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's like, if there's a lesson that we need to get, even in the waking life, we will keep getting hit until we get that lesson. So why wouldn't dreams sort of operate that way, right?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, they'll tend to get, if it's really important, they'll tend to get more intense and more memorable, and maybe mm-hmm. turn from ordinary dreams into more nightmarish dreams as a way to say, look, this is really important. Pay attention.
And you need to look at this.
Yeah, they can escalate, you know, just to be heard.
Yeah. What if it's the opposite? Like, what if you have something in your life? Can you ask your dream to help process that thing for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They've done studies on this, actually. It's a dream incubation, it's called. And it's been an ancient practice. It's really not uncommon to ask your dreams. It doesn't like respond, sort of you ask your dream a question and the next night you have a dream and you can remember it and it tidally responds. It's not quite like that. But usually about maybe a quarter of the time, you'll get a pretty direct response. Sometimes it won't happen right away. It might take a couple of nights. So, but it helps. There's things you can do. So it helps to write down your question and keep it a little bit more like you're not looking for an answer to a math problem or something like the specific things like that. It's more like, I'm really struggling with, you know, say a relationship and I kind of want to some feedback or some help with it, you know, like, can I please dream about get some guidance about my thing? Maybe you're planning to get married and you're not sure, something like that. You go, okay, can I get some guidance around this? And then write it down and put it, you know, by your bed, because that act of writing it down seems to create more likelihood that you will dream about it. And you can also be mulling it over as you're falling asleep, feeling into what you're curious about. And then for the next two or three nights, write down your dreams and treat them as if they're a direct answer, even if they might be sort of clear answer. Sometimes it might be more symbolic, but pay attention to the dreams that come, and usually they'll have some kind of response if you stay with it. And you know, a lot of historically, a lot of artists and inventors and musicians have used dreams to, you know, for creative inspiration as well. Like famously, Salvador Dali is one who you can see in his paintings how dreamlike they are. But he would have a nap in the afternoon. Nap dreams are easier to remember, by the way, because you don't go fully into that deep sleep. You're a little more feathering in and out. But he would hold a key, and then when he first fell asleep, that's when you'd start to be dreaming, and the key would drop because your hand relaxes when you fall asleep. And then that would wake him up, and he'd remember his dreams, because you're just more likely to remember if you wake up in the middle of them. So Einstein's theory of relativity is supposed to be from, you know, an idea from a dream of sledding. And there's a way that, yeah, there's actually a recent study done where it really just showed kind of in experimental terms that it does increase our creativity if we put our dreams specifically ask for creative solutions. So there's a way, I think, that just getting rid of sort of the internal editor is sleeping, and the part that would maybe, you know, narrow our choice of possibilities. So that part's asleep. So it just widens our perspective. Bless you. It just, you know, just widens our capacity to imagine. And we have a lot bigger capacity to imagine than maybe we give ourselves credit for, because in our dreams, it's kind of, it's wide open and anything's possible.
I love that. I'm going to leave it at that. Can you tell people if they want to learn more about dreams? I know you have some courses. Can they work with you? Can they learn from you?
Yeah. So my website's probably like the one-stop place. It's drlesliellis.com. It's like drlesliellis, and it's all one word. Or you could just look me up online. And I have a little course called Dream Work for Yourself, which is little prompts for how to engage with your dreams. I have a course on nightmare relief for everyone. So it's a self-help course that I just finished actually producing. So if you have nightmares, it walks you through the steps you can do to determine if you need professional help, but also things you can do on your own at home or for your children, because children have a lot of nightmares. And yeah, I have a Substack. I have a book that just came out yesterday called A Clinician's Guide to Dream Therapy. It's the second edition. So if you're someone who works with dreams, or even if you're not, it's actually got a lot of information about for anyone interested in dreams, and it's super accessible. So yeah, lots and lots of a wealth of resources for people that want to.
Well, we will link all of those in the show notes. And I will just echo that, you know, I'm not a therapist that works with dreams. And I found that great as a lay person read. I would highly recommend your book to anyone. Yeah, no, it's really insightful. And all the different theories you bring into it, I mean, it's quite incredible. So as well as the stories that help illustrate, people will love that. And so I'll encourage folks to get your book and check out your website. And thank you for spending this time with me and just, bravely jumping into conversation with me. I really appreciate that so very much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And you were brave too. You brought your dream, not knowing, you know, where this was going to lead, this strange image of a woman with no head. So that'll be interesting image to carry with me for a while. And so I just really appreciate speaking with you. And I love your passion and curiosity about this. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
As we buzz around the busy world, it becomes clear there are billions of paths. As we buzz around the busy world, we will appear in other people's photographs. As we speed through the centuries, we will collide and the light will bend. We will be accidentally immortalized in someone else's land.